As John Kellogg's influence grew, his pantheistic ideas spread. In 1899, Ellett J. Wagoner, a physician and minister, had presented the subject at the General Conference session held in South Lancaster, Massachusetts.
How many lives are there in the universe? There is but one life, and that is the life of God. And how long is the life of God to endure? Through eternity!
Do you ever expect to be sick, Elder?
No! I expect to live forever!
When the General Conference was reorganized in 1901, John was at the height of his influence in the church. With the help of G.A. Irwin, General Conference President, he was able to arrange for increased representation for the medical arm of the work. There was more to come.
To sum up, instead of a General Conference President, we will have a 25-man executive committee with Elder Arthur G. Daniels as chairman. The other members of the committee are myself, G.A. Irwin, Elder Hampton W. Cottrell, Elder Frederick Griggs, Elder S.N. Haskell, Elder Alonzo T. Jones, Dr. John H. Kellogg, Elder Robert M. Kilgore, Elder... Well, Dr. Kellogg, you can't say the church doesn't appreciate your talents. You've played a major part in reorganizing the administration, and you're on a number of boards, committees, and corporations. You and Dr. Paulson were even invited to receive ministerial credentials. Too bad you turned it down.
Elder Irwin, I'm sure these additional duties will be enough to keep me busy in the 2 years until the next General Conference session.
I'm glad Elder Daniels returned from Australia in time to serve. The two of you will be working together on more than one committee. It shows that the medical work and the ministry can work in harmony.
On September 6, 1901, at the Pan American Exposition, a Michigan-born anarchist stood in line with thousands of other people who were waiting to shake hands with President William McKinley. The president, a gentleman, certainly had no reason to suspect violence on this day of celebration.
Good afternoon, madam. How kind of you to come.
I'm delighted to meet you, Mr. President. My husband voted for you last November.
Please give my thanks to your husband, dear lady. Good afternoon, sir. I'm so glad that you...
Oh! He's shot!
That man deserved a bullet! Nobody get away!
Hold on, Mr. President. Help is coming. I'm sorry. I didn't catch that, Mr. President. What'd you say about the gunman?
Don't let them hurt him.
Have you heard the news about President McKinley? He died at 2:15 this morning.
Yes, Ella, I heard. That's why I came home early.
Oh, it's hard to believe. It's been 8 days since he was shot. The doctors were sure he would recover.
Oh, it's their fault. They had one of those new X-ray machines right there at the exposition. If they'd only used it, they could have found the bullet and removed it. We must always use the most up-to-date equipment available. Always.
A more personal disaster was soon to befall. On February 18, 1902, John and a secretary were on their way back to Battle Creek from the West Coast. As the two men changed trains in Chicago, a reporter approached Dr. Kellogg, who was easily identified by his white suit.
Yes, what is it, young man? I have a train to catch.
I just wanted to know if you plan to rebuild the Battle Creek Sanitarium, Doctor.
Rebuild? What do you mean? We have a fine facility.
You haven't heard? The sanitarium burned to the ground this morning.
There's no question of relocating the sanitarium. The Battle Creek Sanitarium must be in Battle Creek.
But Sister White has repeatedly counseled that we shouldn't concentrate our members and institutions in one place.
Elder Daniels is right. Sister White has specifically said she wished the sanitarium were not in Battle Creek at all. Isn't that right, Brother Cottrell?
It is, Brother Prescott. What's more, many cities have offered land and money if we'll relocate. There are Niles and Benton Harbor here in Michigan, Atlantic City, New Jersey, and several in California.
On the other hand, brethren, We still own the property here. If we move, we'll have to sell it at a loss. The people of Battle Creek want us to stay. They've pledged more than $80,000 to help us rebuild. And the city has finally recognized our nonprofit status.
That's true. Remember how shocked the officials were when they investigated after the fire and discovered what low wages the staff and doctors received?
Well, you're right, Brother Prescott. They just couldn't believe that doctors would work for $15 a week. Now they're returning $15,000 we've already paid in taxes, and we won't have to pay any more.
Whatever we do, we want to make sure we don't go into debt. When I became chairman of the General Conference Committee, I was appalled at the amount of our indebtedness. There must be no more.
Agreed, Brother Daniels. We'll build on a cash basis.
Is that possible?
Oh, certainly. In addition to the funds we've just talked about, we also have the insurance money, and I'll donate 40,000 copies of The Living Temple, the book I'm writing on physiology. Church members can sell it to raise funds for the sanitarium.
To sum up, then, we agree that this building shall not cost more than $250,000, and that when this thing is done, we are not to have a dollar added to our debt.
Agreed.
Ellen White was distressed when she heard of the decision. Although the directors proposed to erect a building smaller than the original, it was still far too big. Ellen wrote to John from California.
I was instructed to tell you that the great display you are making in Battle Creek is not after God's order. There are other parts of the Lord's vineyard in which buildings are greatly needed. Do not erect an immense institution in Battle Creek, which will make it necessary for you to draw upon our people for means.
On May 11th, 1902, John laid the cornerstone for the new sanitarium. As the building rose, costs far outran the original projections, and only a fraction of the money pledged was actually contributed. In the meantime, John and A.G. Daniels left to attend the European General Conference. It was during John's efforts to establish a sanitarium in England that the first rift occurred between him and Daniels.
And I found the perfect property, Brother Daniels. It costs a mere $30,000. As I see it, our British brethren will assume $5,000 or so of the obligation, and the General Conference the rest.
Doctor, that would be creating a debt here of $25,000.
True.
And you are aware that we've been working night and day for 2 years to roll away the reproach of debt.
I'm aware of that.
Well, Doctor, with church members working so hard to clear debts, I don't see how the General Conference can assume more debt without their approval.
You don't want to have any medical work done in England. You're blocking everything.
What? Stop! Don't shove me! Where are you pushing me? Dr. Kellogg, get away from that door and let me out of this washroom.
No! You're going to listen to me here and now, where nobody can interrupt us.
For nearly 2 hours, John harangued Daniel. But the chairman stood firm.
We are in debt, head over heels, everywhere, Doctor. I'm pledged to my committee and to our people not to go on any longer with this borrowing policy.
You oppose me? Sister White will roll you over in the dust.
I must stand firm to my pledge. And I believe my position is in harmony with Sister White's counsel.
Well, sir, I will never work with you on this cash policy. I'll see you in America. Good day.
In November 1902, a meeting was held in Battle Creek, the forerunner of today's annual council. The stormy session resulted in the General Conference Committee's approval for John's plan of selling bonds to support the sanitarium. Other recommendations did not suit him so well. In fact, they directly opposed John's habit of incurring debts and then persuading the church to pay.
We recommend that all evangelistic and missionary enterprises be conducted on a strictly cash basis. We further recommend that the General Conference or Mission Board be not held financially responsible for any obligations which they have not assumed by their own action.
Dr. Paulson, it looks like Arthur Daniels has won this round.
I heard he told some of the other church leaders that you have an imperious will that needs to be broken.
Oh, yes? Well, Brother Daniels... Brother Daniels is... Brother Daniels isn't a strict vegetarian!
In later years, John Kellogg would write to a friend that he had expected a break with the church since about 1890. Events were moving swiftly toward that break.